And then there is the matter of establishing much better cooperation between labor and management on issues which are outside the collective bargaining process, issues which could make good markets, good labor markets, out of what might be poor labor markets, riven with strife, which young workers lead rather than live in. And there the technique which I strongly urge you for your consideration is the labor management technique, which we used in World War II, of labor management committees. We've now got some law on the books which favor them. We have good examples in New York. This is not a theory. With my assistance and that of others, we now have labor management committees in Jamestown, Elmira, and Buffalo, New York. And as a matter of fact, one of your leaders from Buffalo, Mr. Wessel, is here, who is leading in that effort. I strongly recommend the consideration of that technique to you. And when I was at the breakfast table this morning, just to show you how deep are these issues, another issue was raised with me by the head of the IUE, who said, what about imports? And I said, what about exports? We are having the skin taken off us in exports, and there are millions of workers engaged in export industries. And if you don't import, you won't export. And the growth of our world is absolutely essential if we're to be able to carry the burdens which we're being called upon to carry, and if we also are willing to accept what is the situation today, which as moral human beings we can't accept, where a billion people in this world go to bed hungry every night. And in order to do that job, we have to have our head on our shoulders. And the old doctrines of free trade must give way to the doctrine of fair trade. Overnight, we're going to be deluged and inundated by vast quantities of imports which destroy our markets before they have an opportunity to learn to compete. Now, I propose to you, and I shall be through in a minute. Sorry, Ray, I've taken so long. I propose to you some very serious questions of our time. In personal terms, the more people that we can have in the Senate of the United States who can straddle both worlds, the worlds of management and the worlds of labor, and who will have also the confidence of the people, the more likely we are to come to good resolutions. And if, under the new, young, and gifted leadership of Lane Kirkland and Tom Donohue, supported and sustained by your own officials, Ray and Howard, and all of the presidents who are here, labor will recognize also that it's a new world with new criteria and new values, that it will the more surely take its proper place in the national decisions that we have to make and get its proper share of the new pie, the new economic pie, which is now being based. And so, my friends, I could say my beloved friends, I thank you with everything I've got for your confidence and your faith in me. And if you, as you will be, a decisive force in sending me back in this primary on the 9th of September in my party, the Republican Party, and in the general election, I can only promise you that whatever the Lord has given me, and I think I still have all my marbles, I'll devote to you.
got the thing straightened out, but I didn't get a motor.
Start with,
End the picture.
Getting your reaction to, what, Mr. D'Amato and Ms. Meyerson say would be their differences, with you. Let's start with Mr. D'Amato. He said that he thought there were two basic issues where he differs, that he would cut big spending programs and that he would be stronger on defense.
Well, the, first place, let me say that, my presentation to the voters of this state and to the Republican voters is that they've elected and reelected me now four times and have built up for me an unparalleled seniority and an unparalleled influence in the Senate of the United States. I've served longer than any other senator in the state's history. And therefore, that one, as Republicans want to win this election, including the presidency, I'm offering that opportunity. And secondly, I have learned a lot, and I've devised a great deal that's of great importance to our state and nation in terms of its economy and in terms of defense, in terms of jobs, and of the jobs government has to do. Mr. D'Amato comes to this as a rank amateur from being a town supervisor, and I've had 32 years of training in it, so there's really no comparison. But be that as it may, as to spending less money, we've cut the budget down now to $633 billion. If we're going to cut it more, we're going to take it out of the mouths of babes, in practical effect, because when people like D'Amato speak about cutting, that's what they're going to cut. They're going to cut people who is not going to eat otherwise. Now, there's no question about running a tight ship and about fraud. I'm very tough on those things and will continue to be. And there can be some cuts in that. There always is. Any department store has 3 to 5% leakage. That means stealing. And you can certainly reduce that if you put on a drive for it. I'm all for it. And for cutting the bureaucracy. By the way, the big way to do that will be to give some of these big jobs, like training workers and employing workers, to American business. And that I'm good at, a lot better than D'Amato, I can assure you. And as to defense, I have supported a very strong defense. I voted for defense bills all of my public life. What D'Amato doesn't like is that I believe in the civilian control of weaponry. I don't believe in buying a weapon, whether it's the B-1, or the neutron bomb, just because an admiral or a general says we ought to have it. They've got pet hang-ups too. That's their business. My job is to look it over and see if it's right. Let me give you an example. The B-1 bomber, which Mr. D'Amato makes a big case about. I was joined in the vote against the B-1 bomber by the toughest hawks in the Senate, including Senator Jackson of Washington and Senator Nunn of Georgia. They still represent the toughest talks in the Senate. Why? Because the B-1 cost a lot of money, $30 billion, and was going to be obsolescent before it was ready. What will make it obsolescent is something called a cruise missile, which you can launch against the Soviet Union from 2,500 miles away. That's why it's so much more effective. And because I recognize that and didn't shut my eyes and vote, because people like D'Amato said vote, 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 he thinks I'm soft on defense. I don't believe our people think that, and I believe our people want me to have my head on my shoulders as far as weaponry is concerned.
Right. Ms. Meyerson says that she would have a different emphasis, that you have chosen to concentrate on foreign policy to the neglect of domestic issues. She would concentrate on domestic issues.
She's as much of an amateur as D'Amato, by the way, and I've got the same comparison with her. Where is her federal record? What has she done or ever passed on? Nothing. Now, as to the state of New York, I have worked my fingers to the bone for our state. Bill Proxmire, who chairs the banking committee, which handled the New York City loans in 75 and 78, writes that I alone in 75, and with Moynihan, my partner and friend, in 78, were singly responsible for saving New York City. in the Senate and persuading our colleagues that was the way to go. And to skip 1,001 cases, let's go right here to Albany. You've got a company here called Altec Corporation. Who went to bat for them and got them $10 million for the purpose of having the employees own the plant in order to keep it open and save 2,000 jobs? Me. So I think that that's adequate rebuttal. Now, again, these people don't know what are the facts behind the facts. Why does Meyerson say that? Because I get a lot of advertising in the press when you see kings and princes and prime ministers. But they're very...
Have to ask that question.
Yeah. We can pick up and write it within.
Do you blow your camera?
No.
The lights. We need another outlet circuit.
Alright, this will only take a minute.
That's right.
We used to blow out the assembly chamber half the time when we started. I'm going to ask you this on camera, but I just wondered how you feel personally when you, like Moynihan says how much he reveres you. Everybody says how much, they all say how much they respect you, and yet they all want you out of work. Yeah, doesn't that tick you off?
Ask. I'll give you a fresh answer.
Okay.
Do your whole outlet circuit? Have to go farther to look for one, that's all. Put down the other side of this wall from the same circuit.
Along those lines, I'm not going to ask you this because I don't want to perpetuate the issue, but do you have any idea what Governor Kerry's doing these days?
I really don't. I tell you a very amusing thing. On Sunday, I'd spent the night at East End with some friends to get a night's rest. And he was at the airport, you know, he lives out at Shelter Island. He was at the airport, and he told me some gobbledygook about what he had said. I hadn't read it yet, he said, about the seat being a Jewish seat, and I listened, and, you know, I didn't know, I had no concept what he was talking about. And he seemed to be talking a lot about it, you know. He obviously had very much on his mind. As if he had some very strategic reason for having done this. I don't know whether it was for me or against me. I know Hugh very well. I've done a lot. He's very grateful. But when I finally got into town or into circulation, so I think he's probably, my guess is, half embarrassed. It's unfortunate.
Well, we could put it on the same one.
There isn't an anti-Semitic bone in Kerry's body.
I
don't need it. He doesn't need it. Meyerson doesn't need it.
No.
Nobody needs it.
Did you see the Times Union this morning? She's backing off.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how smart that is. That's how it is.
He gave an explanation down at the Concord, and I'm going to use it on the show this week. And you got all through, and he finished it by saying, "Do you get what I mean?" And you couldn't understand.
That's what he asked me. Do I get what he means?
Quick white cake.
Sure.
I will start with now the reason Meyerson.
Okay. Fine.
Okay. Thank you, Greg.
Okay. You set now? Because I'm Irish, whenever I don't understand him, I just say, well, he's Irish, and I leave it at that. That's the only explanation I have.
All right.
Okay, Senator, I think we can just resume it.
Okay. Go
ahead. I'm Ms. Meyerson.
The reason Ms. Meyerson may have said what she said or implied it is because I get so much advertising when I see kings, princes, and prime ministers. After all, I'm the because of the people have kept me there so long, I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. I receive all this money with the chairman. And so,
okay.
Let's start over.
Okay, yes, sorry, there we go. Okay, on Ms. Meyerson and why she said that. I think we can start, Senator.
He's not ready.
Oh. Are you ready?
We're ready, yes.
Okay. Ms. Meyerson may have said what she did, I can only guess, because when I meet kings, princes, and prime ministers, as I do when they are received by the Foreign Relations Committee, with the chairman, because I'm the ranking member, the people of New York having kept me there now for almost a quarter of a century. That gets a lot of advertising, pictures, television, etc. Whereas the saving the Altec Corporation, or 20 others, making housing projects possible, and education projects possible, may rate a line in the paper, the local paper, and it may not. So the impression is that I'm busy with foreign relations. I assure you, I'm considered to have one of the best staffs on Capitol Hill, not because I receive these dignitaries, but because I deliver the goods for the state of New York.
Senator, your opponents, the governor, Senator Moynihan, they all say how much they respect you and revere you, and they all want you out of work. How does that make you feel?
I understand it. I'm philosophic about things like that. That's politics. I don't feel that way. You've just heard, as I happen to speak about Pat Moynihan, I would speak the same way about Governor Kerry and the what I consider gifted cooperation of my having gotten an amendment so that Kerry could settle the problem of Love Canal with the federal government. He couldn't have done it otherwise, giving the feds the power to use some money, which we voted in the Congress, for the purpose of resettling permanently the Love Canal people who can't be resettled temporarily. Pat joined me in that, Pat Moynihan, and Governor Kerry negotiated the deal with the president. I consider them full cooperators, entitled to every credit.
Senator, Ronald Reagan is coming under a lot of criticism for his statements on China, and Vice President Mondale this week said that it could be a threat to national security. As a foreign relations expert, how serious, or do you think it's serious, Mr. Reagan's statement?
I think it could have become serious, and I give Governor Reagan full credit for coming off it. It was strictly tautological, just use of words. He said an official liaison office. That offends the Chinese, because you may remember that in 72, when Nixon and the Chinese agreed upon some form of regularization of our relationship. It was agreed, and Chiang Kai-shek agreed with it himself, that there was only one China, and that Taiwan was a part of that China. The reason was, of course, that Chiang still thought he might take it all over, and that's hardly likely today. So what we had to do when we normalized with China and sent an ambassador there, and they sent an ambassador here, was to make some way of maintaining our security guarantee for Taiwan, at the same time having that, quote, unofficial. I'm one of the two authors of the Taiwan Relations Act, and I'm not a bad lawyer, and I worked that out very, very carefully. And it is unofficial, and it satisfies the Chinese, and it should satisfy us. And I'm glad that Governor Reagan is going to let it lay, because otherwise it would have been embarrassing. This way, I think Woodcock and others are just sweeping up the pieces, and I don't think that it will represent any real issue.
Are you truly comfortable running with Reagan? Do you really think he's qualified to be president?
I'm comfortable running with him, and I believe he's qualified to be president, essentially based upon the fact that he's been a governor and been the head of a great trade union, both, and been campaigning for this job for 8 years. Also, I think there are a lot of very good people around him that he can employ, and he seems to be bringing them in to a prospective administration. And finally, and to me, the absolutely decisive issue, because I don't agree with everything that he's for example, like a constitutional amendment against abortion, which I do not agree with, and I'm against. And I think the American system accommodates that in one party, otherwise we wouldn't have a two-party system. But we need a change in the top administration. Our country is in deep trouble, at home and abroad. And those of us who feel we can do something about it will do much better with a new leader at the helm.
Senator, if that's the case, why, as your opponent, Mr. D'Amato, keeps pointing out, have you voted with the Carter administration as much as you have?
Did you ever hear anybody say, I'm glad you asked that question? I'm glad you did. Let me tell you what the answer is. In the first place, the choice of votes, which Mr. D'Amato speaks about, is made by a rating service, something called the Congressional Quarterly here. And they pick 167 out of maybe 500 or 600 votes. So it's their choice. And it's never very clear, not never, but very, very often is it not clear whether it is or isn't something administration backs, because a bill goes through many amendments. Now, so much said. I have never voted, and I will not vote, against a Democratic president because he's a Democrat and I'm a Republican. Secondly, I am the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. One half of that 82% of the votes comes out of the Foreign Relations Committee in terms of ambassadors confirmed, and there are, you know, woods full of them, and treaties or parts of treaties ratified by the Senate. Nothing will get out of that committee, I assure you, that I don't approve. Now, I'm a deep believer in the bipartisan foreign policy authored by Arthur Vandenberg, whom I consider one of the greats of our party in the late 40s, that politics stops at the water's edge. So half those votes, to wit, half of 82% in round figures, about 40% of votes which I must cast, because that's my job, that's what I'm there for, and that's why I have such a big responsibility. The rest is about the Republican average of supporting any president, because most things, or many things, we agree on. And finally, as they get out of the Senate, the president's got to sign them, or he'd veto them. If he signs them, he agrees. It's an administration vote, quote unquote. So the question answers itself. I'm no different from any other Republican in terms of my calling them as I see them. And secondly, I have a great responsibility as the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, which accounts for about half of that percentage. But I don't apologize for it. If the people send me back, I will not vote against the proper measure because the President of the United States supports it. Because the President is our President. He's mine, he's theirs, and he's the Republicans. And let me, Peg, if I may, just read you something that was said by Governor Reagan himself, which to me is a terribly useful and important point. Speaking before the VFW exactly 1 week ago, this is what he said. Quote, Governor Reagan, August 18th, VFW convention. Quote, when it comes to keeping America strong, when it comes to keeping America great, when it comes to keeping America at peace, then none of us can afford to be simply a Democrat or a Republican. We must all stand united as America. To which I say, aye.
Are you changing tapes now? Okay, we'll just change. I just have a few more questions, Senator.
I'll make them short.
I'll edit you ruthlessly in any event.
I know that.
Senator, you say you feel that Ronald Reagan is qualified to be president. You were endorsed this week by the state AFL-CIO, but they endorsed President Carter for re-election. When you face groups like that, are you urging people to support Ronald Reagan? Do you push your support for him?
If I think it will do him any good, but if I think it will be counterproductive, as it would have been at the AFL-CIO convention, where the mention of his name in context for me as a Republican would only have put on a demonstration, I think it's very much the better part of valor not to. And at the same time, every political figure wants as much support as he can get from legitimate sources. And however one may feel, I mean, people may feel, about the AFL-CIO, it's certainly one of our great national institutions with millions of working people as members of it.
You are calling for a reconstruction finance program to help revitalize the Northeast. Is this similar to the programs and the reconstruction programs that the governor has been calling for?
It could be. Felix Roten has been calling for it, too. He's been a very gifted architect for refinancing New York City. My feeling is that we cannot have these sporadic financings of major enterprises. And in addition, that we shouldn't have the diversity of agencies like the Economic Development Administration, the Small Business Administration, the Farmers Home Administration. That's only a few. That are giving aid to economic development. For example, the Altec, which I just mentioned, came out of the Economic Development Administration. We ought to have a competent banking agency which can also monitor these loans after they're given. And so I want some reorganization of that whole thing so we suddenly don't do it with some new scheme every Wednesday, but that we're in the position where we can do it if it's necessary. Now, it should be necessary where the product the company is making is vital to the United States and where it would be viable economically if it got that kind of help and where no such help is available from private sources.
I think virtually every candidate in the Senate race is talking about how New York is being shortchanged by the federal government, not getting back its fair share. And Mr. D'Amato says, if you really had all this influence, why haven't you built a better coalition within the Congress to get New York's fair share?
Because that implies that Mr. D'Amato will be a new freshman senator and doesn't know anything about what's going on in the Senate, will take a very long time to find out, can do a better job than I, who have been asked by every Republican, however he may feel, including Barry Goldwater, to run for re-election and who support me. So, leaving that one aside for the moment, look who's talking, in other words. But I have done a great deal about changing formulae. For a long time, I was ranking member of the Labor Committee, Labor and Human Resources, and we've been successful in changing some of them, on education particularly, and also on medical aid. But they're very tough to change because there are 99 other senators, and even if they got a little dough for their states, that their states are not entitled to because the economics have shifted. Now it's the South and Southwest that's a lot more prosperous than the Northeast, to wit, New York and other states like us. They're not giving it up if they can avoid it. So it's a careful, difficult job. And we now have a Northeast-Midwest coalition of senators, which is fighting that battle every day. But I have gotten changes for the benefit of the state of New York and for the benefit of the cities in my state. And I have the thanks and appreciation of governors and mayors throughout my time for doing what I have done, and I'll continue to do it. And it's the seniority and the clout that enables me to do what I have done. But to assume that I'm challenged to do the work of 99 other senators or to overween or win every one of those battles is ridiculous, of course.
Senator, if you pushed your argument to its logical or extremes, you'd never defeat an incumbent.
Well, that's correct, exactly. That is true, but nonetheless, the question is, who is the incumbent and what's he got? Sure, I mean, if all I said was, I'm a senator, so keep me there. I don't say that. Every election is a new election, as far as I'm concerned. The people have an absolute right to choose. But what I'm saying, and I gave you an example, is that I've delivered for them. I've got a desk drawer full of approvals and statements saying from all parties that I did it. That's why, as you said a few minutes ago, Moynihan and Kerry speak of me in such respectful terms because I've delivered for this state.
Senator, you have addressed the questions of your age and your health head on. But again, from a personal point of view, how does it make you feel when your opponent D'Amato raises this, or when Governor Kerry, as he did this week, raised the issue and said in rather blunt terms, well, Javits isn't going to be around forever.
Well, let's say that I know I'm not going to be around forever, neither is anybody else. So, you know, in that I'm equal with everybody. But I have, as you say, addressed my age and my health head on. Governor Kerry got this all mixed up with other problems he has, so I want to leave him out of it. But as far as D'Amato is concerned, I think it's pretty low-level campaigning. And in addition, there are a lot of phony pictures being circulated about me. So I thank you for putting me on television. And the best answers are twofold. One, have a look at me. Come up and shake my hand. See what I look like and what I sound like. One. Two, do you think I still have my marbles? I think I do, and that's why I'm running. And finally, it's only human to say this. Does anybody think I want to commit suicide? So I'm running because it's going to kill me? I'm running because I have a mission to perform and a job to do. I feel well up to it. And any person of my age will tell you the thing to do is not to sit back and retire. The thing to do is to stay active and use the talents God gave you. And that's what I'm trying to do for the people of our state.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Can you couple that shot, please?
Yeah, we have to get a couple fancy shots and then we'll be on.
Well, I got the advantage of one good-looking girl, so.
We'll go for wide count now, Peg.
Okay. I'm going to count to 30 if you'll just look at me as if I'm asking a question.
Right.
Okay, ma'am?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. A couple more of those. I used to recite The Raven during that time, but people couldn't concentrate on it.
Could you give me another short count?
Sure. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30.
Okay, now a couple of verses and we'll be all set.
Try The Raven.
The Raven?
Once Upon a Midnight Dreary, All I Want, Weak and Weary.
Okay, here.
I don't know why I just loved that poem as a child. I had the whole thing down.
You know, I knew one which I recited, I suppose, 150 times in school, of Walt Whitman's. Oh, Captain, My Captain. It was about Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. The dreadful trip is done.
Beautiful.
We just have to take two more shots and we're through.
Oh, okay, I'll keep.